Morning, counsel. This is the time set for oral argument in the matter of State versus Canister. Representing the appellant, Dennis Benjamin. Representing the respondent, Jeff Nye. Mr. Benjamin, you may present the appellant's opening argument.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm going to ask the court today to reverse the order denying the motion to suppress and to remand for further proceedings.
Pardon me for one moment.
Beg pardon?
Pardon me for one moment.
Was it something I said?
I suspect the mystery will be resolved momentarily.
Not cut into your time. So my apologies. You may continue.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was in an argument once where I realized I didn't have my suit jacket on about halfway through. So, but as I was saying, Mr. Canister, I think it's clear, has standing to search under State v. Maxim. And I think this fact by itself resolves the case because standing was the only theory raised by the state below, either at the first hearing on the motion to suppress or at the later motion for reconsideration. And standing was the basis upon which the court denied the motion. At the motion to reconsider, you'll recall that the court said it would not overrule its prior ruling, and its prior ruling was to deny the motion to suppress solely on the standing grounds.
Mr. Benjamin?
Yes.
How are you defining standing for this purpose?
Well, the ability to bring a motion at all, to have the ability to have the court rule on the merits of the claim.
And in that sense, is that the same sort of standing that would apply to an individual who didn't have standing in the item searched, like the car? Or is it a different kind of standing?
Well, it's the standing to simply bring the motion as having any Fourth Amendment right at all. Now, the question of whether there was standing in the individual car is an unresolved question. There are no findings of fact by the district court. And of course, the state never raised that claim below. So that is an totally unresolved claim. The only claim that the state made below was that the fact of the consent, the probation agreement or the parole agreement, that showed that Mr. Canister had no expectation of privacy under the Fourth Amendment or Article 1, Section 13 at all, and just couldn't even bring the motion.
As to that point you're making, the state not raising it, doesn't our case law say that it's the defendant has the obligation to demonstrate standing in the first instance?
The fact that Mr. Canister was searched, or the vehicle that he had was searched, established standing. That he was searched and they were using, I mean, the vehicle was searched, and that he had, and then they were attempting to use that evidence against him. Now, if the state had made a different standing argument, that there was no standing because for some reason he didn't have the authority to be in that car, and we don't know that to be a fact by any means, that was something that I think the state, everyone agreed that but for the parole agreement that there would have been standing by Mr. Canister. But that's just simply an unresolved question. That's not the basis of the district court's ruling. If the court is thinking along those terms, the proper remedy would be a vacation of the order and a remand for further proceedings on that question, certainly not to affirm on an entirely different theory that was not raised by any party below.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because your argument seems to be centered on the use of the word standing, although the record seems to indicate that what the state was arguing was consent, and that was what the district court decided. So I was interested in how you're defining standing and what that means.
I strongly disagree with the factual premise, Your Honor. The state's briefing is clearly framed in terms of standing. You can't even bring this motion because you haven't been harmed in any way. That's the standing argument. Now, I agree that if you take that a couple steps further, the argument might be you don't have standing because you've consented. Now, that's a different argument than the argument that was actually made. And the ruling made by the court was a standing ruling. It wasn't a consent ruling.
But well, did the district court use the word consent?
It did not use the word consent in its written finding, in its written order. And at the motion for reconsideration, it said, I am not reconsidering my order.
And used the word consent.
Oh yeah, he used the word consent in dicta. Yes, the court said that you consented in response to other arguments made by Mr. Canister, a sort of pro se in a sort of a hybrid representation that they allowed him to do. He made some arguments about why the consent was not valid.
So you're saying that at the hearing, the district court did not state that Canister consented to the search, and so he does not have standing to challenge the search?
Yes. I'm saying
the court did not say that at the hearing?
I'm saying that is a ruling saying that there's no standing.
Well, you said he didn't use the word consent at the suppression hearing, and that was my question.
Well, I'm sorry. If I misspoke when I said that, I apologize. My point is that it is true that they found the lack of standing due to this consent. But that's not the basis of the ruling, because that's not sufficient under Maxim. Now, the court says you consented, therefore you do not have standing. The ruling is there is no standing. Now, the court found consent of a sort, but we now know under Maxim that's not sufficient. That's not sufficient to deprive you of standing. The fact that you have consented in this document is exactly what the Supreme Court said in Maxim did not deprive you of standing. It makes it more difficult for you to eventually prevail on the motion, but you have standing to bring the motion. And because that is the ruling of the judge, that's the only ruling, that there was no standing. Now, whether or not there is some exception to the consent requirement has never been talked about by anybody below. The state didn't argue that even if he had standing to bring it, the consent was valid because the police officer knew about the consent at the time of the search. That argument has never been made, well, not until appeal, has never been made and was never ruled on by the district court. So in my view, the state has failed to establish that exception to the warrant requirement under Maxim.
So your position is that the district court never said Mr. Canister consented to the search as a result of his parole waiver. That's your argument.
That's not sufficient to define the consent exception under Maxim.
That he consented is not sufficient.
There are three things under Maxim that have to be shown. One, that you have standing, and you do have standing, notwithstanding your consent. Secondly, there has to be a consent. Okay, those two things I think have been established. One, Mr. Canister has standing, and two, that he consented. The third thing you need to show is you have to show that the police officer knew of the consent at the time of the search. So the consent rule has not been, the consent exception to the warrant requirement has not been established, not merely by consent. It has to be consent plus knowledge by the law enforcement officer.
So then, as I understood what you just said, you're conceding that he consented. So your argument is only that there was no evidence of knowledge.
Your Honor, if you mean consent in the sense that Mr. Canister signed the parole agreement, yes, I agree that he did. He signed it, and we stipulated to that below. That does not establish the consent exception to the warrant requirement.
And your argument then, I'm just trying to understand, is premised on the knowledge piece.
Yes.
And you think that the state has the affirmative burden to prove knowledge without it being raised by Mr. Canister?
They have the affirmative burden of proving an exception to the warrant requirement, yes. This exception to the warrant requirement requires both Mr. Canister signing the consent and the police officer knowing about the consent at the time of the search. That's Maxim. So the state has not met its burden of proof.
But you also had, the Canister had also had the affirmative burden of proving standing.
Standing in the sense of standing was not contested, nor is that the ruling by the district court. Mr. Canister did prove he had standing because he was searched.
Well, knowledge was not contested either.
Well, no, knowledge was not contested. I agree, but it's not our burden. It's the state's burden of proving an exception, not our burden. All we have to do is show that there was a warrantless search, which everybody agrees that there was. So that's conceded. That's conceded. His standing, if you take away the court's ruling that there was no standing due to the probation agreement, the standing was not contested below. And that can't be the basis to affirm the district court, because the district court never ruled on that basis. I mean, if anything, then we would be entitled to a remand to establish standing in the sense that we had permission to drive the car. And if we had permission to drive the car, then we have standing to object to its search.
Well, the district court never ruled on knowledge either.
Right. Then he has to rule that there was knowledge or the exception doesn't apply.
Without it being contested.
We don't have to contest if the state doesn't raise the exception, if it doesn't raise this theory of exception, we don't have to rebut something that they don't raise.
Then why does the state have to contest standing when it was Mr. Canister's burden to prove standing in the first instance as to the vehicle?
He didn't, they never contested standing.
Now my question is why do you think the state had to contest that if Mr. Canister didn't have to contest the knowledge piece?
Well, because the state conceded standing on that basis. where we filed a motion to for them to approve a warrant, exception to the warrant requirement. I mean, I think the fact that Mr. Canister was driving a family vehicle, if I remember correctly, is prima facie case of standing. There's no dispute about that. There's no dispute. There's no suggestion that it was a stolen vehicle or a rental vehicle where he might not have standing. And I would point out that this is an entirely new argument that the court's raising for the first time. This has never been brought at all to the lower court or by the state.
Mr. Benjamin?
Yes.
I just want to be clear that I understand everything that's in the record that you're contending is at issue. So it's the agreement, the parole agreement, the judgment of conviction, the preliminary hearing transcript, and I believe the affidavit of probable cause. Is that correct?
What? Yes. What? Okay. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
Are there any other items in the record that the district court considered in reaching its conclusion?
Your Honor, my belief is that the court relied on three things. This is what it took judicial notice of. It took judicial notice of the parole agreement. It took judicial notice of the preliminary hearing, and it took judicial notice of the affidavit of probable cause. That, to my understanding, is the entire record that the district court based its ruling upon.
And you'll agree there's no credibility issues that the court reached based on Mr. Canister's so-called testimony?
Well, yeah. The judge specifically said he was not considering that as testimony. He was only considering it as legal argument by Mr. Canister in this sort of hybrid representation.
Do you know whether the fact that the record is limited to those written materials versus testimony and weighing of evidence credibility, whether that impacts this court's standard of review?
Well, it doesn't impact the court standard of review because the standard of review is de novo because it's a question of law. The question of law is, did Mr. Canister have standing to bring this motion? The answer to that question is yes.
So there's no dispute of factual questions?
No, there's no dispute of factual questions that come to mind. I mean, that's the only question. The question is, did this signature on the parole agreement deprive Mr. Canister of standing to bring the motion? There's no credibility determination in that. It's legally yes or legally no.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I will reserve, if there aren't any other questions, I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you.
Mr. Nye, you may present the respondent's argument.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I want to start by correcting a few things that I think were incorrectly stated by Mr. Benjamin. So first, the state generally attacked standing, but within that argument was an argument that Mr. Canister consented to this search. On page 69 of the record, the state's response to the motion to suppress, the state wrote that the defendant's motion to suppress fails because he waived his constitutional rights concerning searches. And then the next sentence says, in fact, as part of his parole agreement, the defendant consented, and that's in italics, emphasized, to searches by law enforcement officers of both his person and of places over which the defendant was exercising controlling authority. So the state did assert an argument that Mr. Canister consented. And then not only did the state assert that argument, but the district court specifically found that this search was legally valid. that's not a conclusion of standing. Standing asks, does this individual have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the thing searched? It doesn't matter if the search was legally valid. But the district court went beyond that standing and found that it was legally valid. And that's on the transcript of the, I guess you'd call it the motion to reconsider, is how it was phrased. On page 20, line 15, the district court said, and so the stop was legally valid, the search was legally valid. Again, the district court would not have any reason to find that the search was legally valid if it was limiting its holding, its finding, to the standing decision. So that was raised below. It was addressed by the district court below. And so it's preserved for the state on appeal to argue consent. Now, even if it wasn't, if this court looks at the Maxim decision from the Idaho Supreme Court, in that case, the state on appeal expressly disclaimed any argument as to the reasonableness of the search. And the Idaho Supreme Court nevertheless said, we understand that the state is disclaiming this reasonableness argument, but that's how we, the Idaho Supreme Court, treat these parole agreements, is they go only to the reasonableness prong of the analysis. And so we're going to look at the reasonableness here. And so even if the state somehow failed to raise that, the Idaho Supreme Court said, no, the law in Idaho is you treat those as consent. And the state did assert, it relied on the parole agreement in this case, it did in the district court, and it still is doing so on appeal. And so this court should look at, was there consent here? Now, that brings us to kind of the second issue of what do we do about the knowledge element? Did the officer know that they had waived, the defendant had waived his rights? That, as has been pointed out, that issue was not raised by the defendant or by the state. It just wasn't addressed at all. And Mr. Benjamin has now conceded here on appeal that there's no factual dispute in this case. And that's what all of the parties and the district court were operating under, that theory in the district court. There's no factual dispute here. We all agree what happened, which I think explains why there was no hearing on the motion to suppress. In the sense of there was no testimony or anything else. They just, the court just judicially noticed past transcripts, and they had kind of an off the record discussion about the parole agreement. And that was kind of taken into evidence, but there was no testimony. And the reason for that, I think, is because everyone kind of agreed on what happened. And part of that agreement, at least according to Mr. Canister's motion to suppress, part of that agreement was that the reason the officer searched the vehicle was because the defendant was on parole and had waived his Fourth Amendment rights. That's in the motion. And so everyone was operating under this understanding that the officer searched the car because the rights had been waived. And I don't know how logically you could explain that that could be his rationale for searching the car unless he knew that the rights had been waived. Now, Mr. Benjamin has argued in his reply brief that, well, maybe the officer was just assuming that, incorrectly assuming that, that he had waived the rights, or incorrectly assuming that all parolees had waived the rights. That may be the case, but he could have asked that question on cross-examination. He chose not to. He chose not to raise that fact that then under Maxim could undercut the state's case. So the state presented a complete case of consent for the search. And if Mr. Canister wanted to attack that and undercut it by trying to show that the officer didn't actually have knowledge of the parole agreement or the waiver in the parole agreement, he could have done that, and he didn't. And that means that the district court never had the opportunity to address really the only argument that Mr. Canister is pushing on appeal. And that's problematic because first of all, it means the state wins just on the merits. But second of all, it means that the argument that he's presenting here today in oral argument was waived. Now, I know Mr. Benjamin has made this argument that all he had to do was kind of contest, file his motion to suppress, and somehow that preserves any argument that he wants to make because it's the state that has the burden and not him. And so now he's free to just make any argument that he wants. I would point this court to its own decision in State v. Armstrong. And in that case, the defendant made the same argument that's being made here. Basically that, hey, I generally contested this. I filed a motion to suppress. I said my Fourth Amendment rights were violated. And so I now I get to make any arguments that I want. And this court said, no, that's not the way that it works. And so this court said that the defense, so here's the quote, even when a defendant mentions the general basis for a motion to suppress, his or her arguments on appeal are limited by what was argued to the trial court. So just saying I'm moving to suppress this, my rights were violated, doesn't preserve any argument you want to make. You have to present that argument, that theory, to the district court. And again, as this court explained in Armstrong, this ensures that the trial court has an opportunity to consider and resolve disputes at a time when the error can be prevented, mitigated, or cured. So had Mr. Canister raised this argument about knowledge and the officer not having knowledge in the district court, that question could have been easily resolved. But he didn't, because everyone was operating under the assumption that there was no dispute of fact. Everyone had that same understanding. And now even here on appeal, Mr. Benjamin is saying there's no dispute of fact here. And so the state fails to understand how there can be no dispute of fact, yet the state failed to prove a fact that it's now saying it did prove. And so the state would ask that this court would affirm the district court on the basis of consent, not necessarily the standing.
I have one question, Mr. Nye. Our case law refers to standing often as an expectation of privacy in the item search, the vehicle. So do you agree with Mr. Benjamin that the state conceded that Mr. Canister had an expectation of privacy in the vehicle, which was apparently owned by his father?
No, Your Honor, I would not. I do not agree that the state conceded that. As Judge Lorello pointed out, standing is in fact a burden on the defendant. The defendant has that burden to prove that. Now, not every court forces the defendant to prove that burden. And sometimes I think what happens is, if the state doesn't speak up, then everyone just assumes that the state is conceding that there was standing. And that, you know, maybe that's a reasonable concession or a reasonable assumption, I mean. But that same logic would apply to the officer's lack of knowledge in this case. Yes, the state has the burden to prove all of the facts necessary to show consent to the search and that it was a proper search, but it was never contested. And so the district court reasonably just believed that Mr. Canister wasn't contesting that fact. There was no dispute there for the district court to resolve, and so it never addressed it. But I would not agree that the state conceded that. There's no mention of the state conceding that part of standing.
Thank you.
And I think,
Mr. Nye, although not a concession, would Mr. Canister's standing in the vehicle be wrapped up in your assertion that there was no factual disputes between the parties below? So everyone's operating as though Mr. Canister did have standing and as though there was consent that the searching officer was aware of.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that that's probably fair. While the state did not expressly concede, this argument that I'm making, that everyone in the court below was operating on the same set of facts, that does also suggest that everyone was operating under the understanding that Mr. Canister did have standing in his car. But I think that that's part of what's so dangerous about, you know, well, they had the burden but they didn't raise it here. A lot of this is just kind of decided through silence, you know, unspoken in the district court. If no one's contesting this, if no one's pushing it, then the district court has no reason to address it. So the district court had no reason to address whether Mr. Canister had standing in the car because no one pushed that. The district court had no reason to address whether the officer, in fact, knew about the waiver before the search because nobody pushed it. And again, as this court pointed out in Armstrong, the whole point of this is that you got to push these things in the district court so that it has the opportunity not only to address it in the first instance, but to correct it when it's easily corrected. And so, you know, the defendant can't just sit back and not raise this factual argument until appeal and then say, aha, I know I didn't say anything about this in the district court, but now I'm going to bring it up because I think that ruins the state's case, because now our hands are tied. We can't present new evidence on appeal. And so I think that that's the rationale, at least my reading of the Armstrong case, is that that's the rationale for holding not only the state, but also the defendant to the arguments pushed below. And that is, in fact, consistent with the Idaho Supreme Court's more recent decisions, where they've kind of even tightened up waiver, you know, both parties equally. There's no exception there for who has the burden or not. If you want to preserve an issue for appeal, you have to present it to the district court. And if there are no further questions from the court, we would ask the court to affirm the district court's denial of the motion to suppress.
Thank you, Mr. Nye. Mr. Benjamin, you may present the appellant's reply.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. As to the issue of standing in the vehicle, now, the state made an express standing argument. The standing argument was it had none. Mr. Canister had none because he was on parole. He had no parole agreement. So the fact that they did not raise the standing argument as to the standing in the vehicle is a waiver. They raised a consent, they waived a standing argument, but did not raise this particular standing argument. So that's a waiver of standing. And I think the fact that the affidavit of probable cause shows that Mr. Canister was driving a relative's vehicle, and there's no indication that there was that he had stolen the vehicle or was driving it without permission, is at least a prima facie case of standing. Now, when Judge Brailford asked me about the dispute over facts, I agree that there aren't any disputes over facts because the court resolved this case on the issue of whether or not the parole agreement by itself deprived Mr. Canister of standing. We agree that he signed this parole agreement. What we don't agree with is that that by itself, that does not deprive him of standing under Maxim. Now, the state wants us to now first consider its new argument on appeal that the consent plus knowledge, we should consider that. And then two, that I've made some sort of concession that there's no factual dispute over the new argument raised by the state for the first time on appeal. I don't concede that. I've never conceded that. I conceded the fact that the court's ruling is one of law. The court's ruling that there was no, that the parole agreement deprived Mr. Canister of standing, there's no factual dispute about that. Now, the state never raised the argument that this consent was valid because, one, Mr. Canister signed it, and two, the police officer knew about it at the time of the at time of the search. That was not a factual dispute below because that issue was never raised below. So I think Mr. Canister and his counsel can hardly be blamed for not raising a factual issue on a legal theory that wasn't raised when they don't have the burden of proving the exception to the warrant requirement. So if anything, this case should be remanded for factual development. If the court's going to allow the state to raise this consent plus knowledge theory for the first time on appeal. Now, the state argues about the cases post Armstrong, and I'll talk about Armstrong in a second. But the important one, I think, is Garcia Rodriguez, where the state in another context tries to raise a new theory of exception to the warrant requirement. And the Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that. You are stuck with the theories that you raised below. The theory raised below was lack of standing. Now, even if you construe that to mean lack of standing due to consent, the consent has to be both Mr. Kniester's consent and the officer's knowledge, and there is no evidence in the record below, and more importantly, the district court never makes such a finding. So that the argument that somehow Maxim has been, we can assume that Maxim has been fulfilled, the exception set out in Maxim, is just not the case, because one, the district court never heard any such argument about that, and it never made any findings, and the record below doesn't show that the officer knew. The officer knew that that Mr. Kniester was on parole. That's true. But there's no evidence at all that he knew everyone on parole has consented to the search. That's an entirely different question, of which there is no evidence. So if I might talk now for a second about the Armstrong case. The Armstrong, of course, is a 2015 case, and Judge Granton, you were on that case along with Justice Schroeder and Judge Gutierrez. Now, since that case, there have been a series of Supreme Court cases that undercut the theory, the ruling in Armstrong. And let me suggest that events have overtaken Armstrong. And under this trilogy of new Supreme Court cases, that we have properly presented this, the Maxim claim. So in Brookfield, there are three cases. There's Brookfield, there's Gonzalez, and one other, which will come to me. So in Brookfield, the court said the issue was adequately preserved for appeal, even though the appellant's arguments had changed in support. So as long as the position is consistent, the position of the person, of the appellant is consistent, then the arguments can change during the course of the appeal. Now, the argument here, of course, is that there was a specific argument that there was no exception to the warrant requirement. So the most recent case in this regard is this case called State versus Gonzalez from 2019, where the court uses the analogy that as long as you're riding the same horse, we agree that you can groom the horse groom the argument on appeal. So the argument made by Mr. Kniester below was that there was no valid warrant requirement. So I think given the change in these cases, Supreme Court cases since Armstrong, I think that Armstrong has been overtaken by Supreme Court case law. With that, I don't have anything further.
Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Thank you, counsel, for your argument today and your responses to our questions. This matter will be taken under advisement and a written opinion will be issued in due course. The court will be at recess until the April 22nd oral argument. Thanks again, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.